Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Triple Wing Hammer Report. And I want to wish each one of you a good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great country of ours. And this is our eighth show going forward. And boy, I'm sure appreciate you guys still hanging there with us. I checked the downloads and everything, and you guys seem to be downloading this stuff and really enjoying it and everything, so I appreciate that. And like I say, it's just a service here, you know, to get you to get more in depth with the guys who are really doing it with the wings philosophy and everything. Of course, you know my philosophy: anything with a wing is lethal. And it doesn't matter if you run a single, double, or wing tee. If you're doing any one of those offenses, guys, you are a step beyond everybody else. Got a great show lineup tonight. I'm a little bit out of our norm. Tonight we're going to be talking about the old wing tee. Pat Murphy is, I guess, from Montana. And he has a little different spin to what we do and everything. And so we're going to get him online here in a second. But then, again, for our announcements and everything, so we can get this going, the National Single Wing Coach Association, lost for words right here, symposium is coming up, and that's going to be in Dumfries, Virginia, and that's in about 3 weeks, the end of the month, so guys, get it together. You can't get better information than this at this symposium. Of course, you know, Travis Connors, Derek Minor, Mickey Thompson, Sean Orr, Corey Parker. They'll be speaking at those things, and for a grand cost of $25. You can't beat that for that information and the relationships that you would build going forward. You know, every speaker we talk to is saying how important these things are, not necessarily for the X's and O's, but for the relationships going forward, whereas you can give these guys a call and about certain things. I mean, it's just fantastic, the information that is out there and things that we still don't know. If you want to bring your entire staff, which I suggest you do, you know, it's $50 for your entire staff. So I don't think you can beat that deal anywhere. So, and next week I'm going to have Jerry Sargent on so he can talk a little bit about this so we can get information about it and just for him to tell the story about what we do about the single wing symposium. The conclave, of course, is going to be held now next March 6th and 7th. Start putting your pennies together so that you can gain. All you single wing guys, just get out there and start saving your money because, again, people you just can't beat. That's going to be held March 6th and 7th, as I said before, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And Todd Bross is the organizer for that great event. The Double Wing Symposium, we're still planning that. Talked to J.J. Lawson earlier this week, and I talked to Jody Higgins, the two main sponsors for those things, and they are working on getting the dates and everything, so as soon as they give me information, I will get it out to you so you can start planning for those for that great event, too. The books haven't changed, people. If you haven't picked these books up, I strongly suggest you get these books. Win Forever, Win, Work, and Play Like a Champion by Pete Carroll. The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. Seasons of Life by Jeffrey Marks. Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman. And Good to Great by Jim Collins. And I think I'm going to have another one for you next week. I'm currently reading it right now. Another great book, I think, and I'll share that with you next week, which was suggested to me, of course. Again, if you know coaches who are doing great jobs, send their names in so we can get them on air. We like to share information, and if you can get these guys on, again, we just want to find out what they're doing, and we want to give them a little love, for the jobs they are doing. And if you got kids who are doing great things in your program, what we want to do is give them a shout out here. That old misnomer that the guys that we coach, we don't get them ready for college and everything, but we all know that's not true. We just get them ready for life experience and everything, and if they can play, the colleges will find them. And, even from Rick last week, one of his kids got drafted. Can't think of the kid now. One of his kids got drafted last week and everything. So you let us know about these kids so we can give them a shout out and to give them some love on hand, especially if you have somebody on your staff who's doing something great. Let us know so that we can also give them that shout out too. Tonight's guest, Pat Murphy, hails from the great state of Montana. And I first learned of Pat maybe about 6-7 months ago when I was looking at something, and it intrigued me. And, of course, when something intrigued me, I go and do the investigation. I find out more about the people. And I went and bought his stuff. And, guys, it answered a lot of questions for me. So we hope that you can get the concept of what Pat is talking about and kind of put it into your philosophy and everything, because this stuff is great. I think it's great, and his philosophy, and he has proven that it works. So let's see if we can get Pat on here now and see if we can start our conversation with Coach Murphy. Coach, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. How are you doing tonight,
Excellent.
Pat?
Excellent. I'm doing great.
You know what? I look at your picture and I read your bio, and it just not believe that that you've been coaching for as long as you have. What's the secret out there in Montana?
Oh, I don't know. I've been this is going on my 31st year, and every time I hear that, I get a little more grayer, I think. So I have a kid on that I'll be coaching that I coached his dad. So that really made me feel old, and that happens this year. So
God have mercy. You have aged well.
Well, I must have sent you a younger picture.
For anybody on the east side of the Mississippi who don't know who Pat Murphy is, you kind of like to tell us who you are and what you've done, and just tell us who you are.
Well, I've been running the Wing T for many years. I guess about 10 years ago we decided to, move to the shotgun offense, but I wanted to still run some of our Wing T concepts. The further you get away from the East Coast, the more the Wing T kind of gets changed a little bit, because we don't have the old hardline Delaware Wing T guys and all that stuff. So we have more spread guys out here on the West Coast, and getting in toward the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, we take a lot of our philosophies and coaching techniques from those guys. So we moved to the kind of changed the wing tee to a shotgun offense, and it's been really successful for us.
Successful, as I think, is being very very modest. I think you won about 3 state championships doing this thing.
Four. Don't cheat us on one there, Coach.
You've done it 4 times.
We've been to 6 state championship games in the last 9 years, and we won 4 of them. So, and it's always those 2 that we lost that haunt you.
Yeah. Well. Enjoy the victories. And reading up on your history of your school, that school has a rich tradition in winning.
Yeah, we've had the Petrino boys have been there. Bobby Petrino, of course, the Arkansas coach, and now he's at help me out there, Coach. He's somewhere in Kentucky.
Louisville, I think. Yeah,
Louisville. And then Paul Petrino went to our school. Tom McMahon, who's coaching for the Colts, he's the special teams coordinator for the Colts. So a lot of history of good coaches coming through that our school, and just a lot of success. We've had 11 state championships in the last 30 years or something like that. So I just feel fortunate to be a part of that.
Now, the high school we're talking about for our listeners is Capitol High School. Am I correct?
Correct.
Yeah, we have not mentioned their names and everything, but I was very impressed with the history of that school. Where were you before Dan, Coach?
Just all over Montana. I was a little school in Boulder, Montana, and a school in Livingston, Montana. So kind of Montana born and bred, and can't seem to leave the state. Doggone it.
Now, were you the head coach in both instances?
Yeah, both head coaches.
Okay.
So.
And did you run the shotgun there, or did you evolve into it at the
Yeah, we kind of I've always ran the wing team, and I was always under center. And when we moved to Capitol about 11 years ago, they were a spread team. Some of the kids and parents, I don't know if they really liked the idea of a wing tee guy coming in. So, you know, we kind of made some adaptations right then, and you know, and then I learned quickly how to kind of adapt some of the spread shotgun principles to the shotgun or to the wing tee, and we kind of moved forward from then. And every year we learn something new. Basically, we learn what not to do, and that's why people call me up to save themselves a lot of time, because we waste a lot of time just finding out what does not work.
Academically, I saw that your kids, your football player, you hold them to a high standard. Was that I think 1 year you had an average of 3.8 from the team or whatever? Am I correct?
That was our seniors. For our seniors was 3.7 GPA. Yeah. So we're real proud of that. You know, our academic. We like to think we're the Harvard of the state. We have a lot of bright kids, and we hold our kids accountable for academics. You know, we try to tie that into football as well. We've done stuff like homework 100s, where if you're missing a homework assignment, everybody does a 100-yard sprint. So, you know, if 10 people on the team don't have their homework in, then we run 10 100-yard dashes, and I run them too, so they get to learn to get their homework in. Otherwise, Coach Murphy's probably going to die of a heart attack, so they don't want that on their conscience.
Okay. And what do your underclassmen catch on real fast as to what the program is, you know, as far as academics?
Yeah, I think once you envelop with the seniors, it kind of filters on. You have that good senior leadership, and then the kids kind of pick up on that. So, and they kind of want to, you know, they're good role models, and that's what we want to you know, show to the younger program is we have great role models. This is what we want to aspire to. And I think once you build that into your program, I think it just filters through the whole program and down to the middle schools, and then you're off and running. And the benefit of that, you don't have as much discipline problems because it all kind of takes care of itself, and that's kind of where we're at. We didn't always used to be that way, but we're kind of that way now, so we're kind of on cruise control right now.
Mm-hmm. So that old terms in a movie I heard one time, the kids are their brother's keeper. They kind of look out for each other when it comes to somebody doing something wrong.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you know, since you hold them accountable, they know, and they want to kind of live up to the expectations of our good senior leadership.
What kind of community do you have there, Coach? I'm sure that everybody's supportive and everything because you've gotten them, you've gotten them for a championship. But what kind of community support do you have there?
Well, just a great community. We're the state capital, so we have a lot of the, government type workers in our state. But we also have a lot of ranchers and good tough ranching kids and farmers, and so. You know, we got a good mix of engineers all the way down to the ranching community, and they all kind of support each other, and it's fun to see them kind of get together. It's a lot of the people don't realize that, you know, football in our city is more of a social thing for the parents, so they could get a chance to get together and hang out in the stands, and it's really a social event for them. You know, winning's just kind of a bonus, so they like to see us win, but you know, when you get a chance to get together and just kind of hang out, that's fun too.
Is Montana a sparsely populated place, or you know, I've never been there, and I've looked at maps and everything of it, but do you have a lot of population where they're not so close together there, outside the city?
Yeah, we're pretty spread out. You got to come up here there, Coach. We'll take you fly fishing, and you'll have a good time. But we have one of the bigger, you know, states in the union here, and some of our drives are 4.5 hour trips, so we're kind of centrally located. We have teams that have to travel eight hours to get to their game. So it's really spread out. We're in the largest classification. There's 14 teams in our classification. You know, that might seem good for some of the big states, but, you know, it has its drawbacks. The drawback is our enrollment in our classification goes anywhere from 1,000 to 2,400. So we're one of the smaller schools in our state. We're a public school, but you know, we play regularly a team that has 1,000 kids more than us. So we don't use that as an excuse. We usually beat those teams, but you know, that's one of the reasons we have success against those big schools is, you know, we don't make it an issue. We think it's a bonus, so we can kind of narrow down our kids.
What do you do to get your kids prepared for a season? You won your state championship game. What's next?
Well, weight training is probably our key to our success. We have, you know, we run a good offense and defense, but you know, it's that off season that really gets us going. We start lifting in December at 6 a.m., and the kids have bought into that, and they realize that's one of the reasons for our success. They realize we're not the biggest school. We don't have a ton of athletes, and we need to work harder than any other school. So, yeah, 6 a.m. on December, we meet pretty much every day of the week, and we put the basics in, bench, squat, power cleans. We do a lot of powerlifting. We compete in powerlifting meets, so that kind of helps motivate our kids. And that's pretty much year-round. If the kids are in another sport like basketball, we encourage that. We encourage them to do other sports. Then we require them to take a weight training class so they can get their weightlifting done, you know, during the school time, and it doesn't interfere with their sport. But a lot of commitment involved, but, you know, we reap the benefits by the time football comes around.
So you have cooperation in your school with the other coaches in other sports. They understand what the deal is.
Yeah, we're kind of a rare school. We all kind of support each other. We all go to each other's games. You know, like we said, we're a smaller school, so, you know, maybe that's a benefit for us. We always support and we always encourage the kids to do other sports, especially in the springtime. What we notice in the springtime, it gets pretty around here, and the girls look better, and the kids just want to run around and not do stuff. So we encourage them to go out for track and tennis and baseball and all those other sports, we're still lifting, so as long as they're competing in those other sports, I think that's a big key, you know, is to get that competition. You know, they want to win, and they're competing constantly. So that's – other coaches buy in, we've had success with the other programs as well. Our basketball team won the state championship this year, so that was good.
That's fantastic. Now, I know you're the mad genius, and you do all this by yourself. And you don't need any help. You just got people filling roles. Am I on the right track here?
I don't think so. I got a lot of help, man. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so I steal from everybody.
What kind of staff? I was being tongue-in-cheek there for a little bit. And how would you – how what kind of staff do you have? I mean, obviously they're very good at what they do. But how would you describe them to everybody who's listening to us?
Great teachers. You know, we try to find great teachers, and we try to stress to the staff that, you know, to build relationships, and that's really the secret sauce to winning is building those relationships with the kids and the community. When you get that, the kids will play harder for you. You know, if you're just a crusty old guy that yells and screams all the time, the current kids these days don't buy into that. There's so much other things that kids can be doing these days than to listen to some old guy yelling at them. So we really buy into building those relationships with the kids, and our coaches are just great teachers, and we want to fine-tune our technique, so each week we get better, and hopefully they buy into that, and the kids buy into that, and we get better, and by the time we hit the playoffs, you know, we should be better than the other teams because we're concentrating on those little things, getting better and perfect footwork and stuff like that. So, but a great staff, and they make me look smart.
Do you have good retention, or do you have them coming in and out?
Yeah, we haven't had a coach quit in a long time. So mainly the wives make them quit. You know how it is, but mm-hmm. We have a 13 people on our staff from freshman to varsity. And Montana's kind of unique. We have four levels of football. We have a full freshman team, a full sophomore team, a full JV team, and a full varsity team. So we have quite a big staff, and then we work with all those kids. The freshmen are kind of separated, but the sophomores through varsity kind of work together as far as individuals, and when we separate them when we go to team periods.
Mm-hmm. And how many kids do you have totally involved in your program?
On average, from freshman to varsity, we got to get about 160 out each year. Mm-hmm. Most we ever got out was like 180.
And of course, all your kids are angels. And
yeah, I was just lamenting my spring period is I'm the most busiest as a coach. Not necessarily in the fall; it's in the spring because I'm constantly hunting down kids, making sure their grades are up and how they're doing in school. Because you know, we have some strict policies. If they're not passing four classes, then they can't compete in a fall sports. So I'm always running around checking on grades.
Is that the toughest thing you got with your kids, grades? Are there any other issues that you have with them as far as discipline and everything?
You always have things creep up, and each kid is, you know, individual. And, you know, I think it's human nature to kind of see what you can get away with. So, and our kids are no different from that. So I think you just got to kind of stay on that type of thing. And as, like I said, going back to the building the relationships, if you have a good relationship built with the kid, they're not tending to, you know, to act out. That's what I was, as a teacher, I teach math and computer science, so, you know, I always want to go to the kids. I go to the speech and debate meets, I go to soccer meets, I go to everything, and I want to make sure the kids see me, and I congratulate them after their contest. So, you know, you get out there and you build those relationships with the kids, and then they don't tend to want to be as bad in your class or on your football program.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to, this past couple of years, did you ever have to dismiss a kid that just was just hard-headed and didn't want to get on board with what you were doing?
Yeah, we have other ways to kind of get them going instead of, you know, just dismissing them. We have a little period called the concentration period at the end of practice. So this is for a period where kids have a hard time concentrating, whether it be in school or whether it's on the, you know, they're misbehaving on the football field, getting personal penalties, anything. We send them to one of our coaches, and he has a little period where they help them concentrate. And we do that physical kind of type stuff, and it, you know, strong body, strong mind. It's going to build their mind up from there. That fixes most everything.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking. I'm laughing at the term you use, concentration period.
Oh, you got to skin it somehow for the parents.
I know. I think I'm going to start using that right there. Instead of just using punishment, you use concentration period. What is your basic philosophy when it comes to offensive football coaches?
Gosh, the basic philosophy is to get the ball to your speed or get the ball to your athletes in an open field. I strongly feel that the hardest thing to do in football is make an open field tackle. It's just it's a tough thing. You get a good athlete against a good athlete. Make a move. You know, one broken tackle and you're off and running, you get a big play. So that's what we try to do, and that's what we try to do with our little bubble screens and stuff off our run game. We love the sweep, we love the wing tee because they're a sweep offense, and you know, that's what gets our speed and athletes out in space.
You look for specific people for these positions, or you just whoever shows up, you know, we try to fit them in there. How do you pick these guys?
Well, we kind of learn from, you know, we're actively involved in some of the younger programs, the middle school programs, so we kind of know who our speed and our athletes are coming up, and we also know from them doing other sports. Usually it's the basketball kids, the point guards, the track athletes that are some of our better athletes as far as football and making moves in open space, so we kind of know who they are. Speed kids, quickness, I kind of value quickness, shiftiness over overall speed. If a kid has overall speed and that quickness, then you got a special kid, and that's where you got to get them the ball.
Do you have many of those coming up, or you just have to look for them every year?
Yeah, we got some pretty good speed coming up. We should be pretty fast next year. We have a kid playing at Boise State right now. He's going to be one of the top wide receivers in the nation. He'll probably get drafted next year. So he was 6'4", and one of the top state champion in the 110-meter hurdle. So when you got that combination of size and speed and quickness, you got a great athlete.
Mm-hmm. You are going to get paid somewhere along the line.
Yeah, as we he made me look smart for 4 years. He went to 4 straight state championships, winning 3 of them. So,
why did you start running a wing tee?
You know, when I started coaching, the head coach I worked under ran the wing tee, and that was about 30 years ago. And gosh, I love the concept of, you know, you have a base play, you have a counter play, you have a play action off that. That's and the whole fact that you got a tight end and a wing, that adds that extra gap. It's just tough to defend for most defenses. So I just kind of bought into that philosophy. I just kind of understood that and just always used a wing and always, you know, used that Tubby Raymond philosophy of have a base play, counter, and a play action. And it's kind of worked for me so far, so I'm sticking with it.
And you started evolving to the shotgun when you got to Capitol, if I understood
correct.
You correctly. And you did that, well, one of the reasons you say you did that because you wanted to get the mamas and daddies off your back a little bit because you don't think that they could stand a wing tee. But what also made you go to that?
Well, we kind of realized we had some pretty good wide receivers. We had an offense that was spread. So they had developed a lot of wide receivers. So it just seemed kind of the perfect little marriage. And we kind of just found out that if you can the quarterback by standing in a shotgun position, you lose the misdirection and you move the good ball fakes from under center. You lose that. But you gain reads. So the quarterback can actually read a defender on the backside. So you don't have to block that guy anymore. So I always like that philosophy. It's kind of an option philosophy. You know, they might have a big stud defensive end on that backside. You don't have to block him anymore. We can read that guy. Likewise, you can also throw quick little run passes. It was what we kind of been going to lately is as the play is taking place, you can read the flat defender on the backside. And if he starts cheating and flowing with your buck sweep, you can just dump a quick little pass off to him. So, and take advantage of that. I always kind of felt that from the shotgun, the defenses can kind of, you can see them cheating. You can see them running with the play and over pursuing and flowing, and you can take advantage of that on the backside.
Do you use a lot of up-tempo in your philosophy and everything?
Yeah, we just started going to that about 3 or 4 years ago. We call it our Fuji package, and it's a military term. So look it up on the internet. It has some bad words in it, so I don't want to Fujimo. So if you're a military guy, you know what Fujimo means. Otherwise, Google it. But we've gone to that just because you start getting a little bit of tendencies. And we've noticed a lot of defenses have a hard time adjusting to our wing, especially if we position them in different places. Defenses like to align to our wing. So when you start going tempo and you're moving them around a lot, they have a hard time signaling in the defense, calling the defense, and then getting aligned properly. So we've had a lot of success with our tempo offense.
Do you find yourself throwing more or running more out of the shotgun?
We're running more probably out of the shotgun. You know, like we said, we're reading it. Our league is, you know, we're one of the top teams in our league, so our league is bent on stopping our buck sweep. That's kind of our play. So, you know, we've seen everything. We've seen every offense or every defense and blitz thrown against us. So we start to learn what they're going to do. They know exactly what we're going to do philosophy-wise. So, but our run game is still very strong. Our little run passes that we're running and our screens off our run plays are starting to hit pretty big. And I think that's one of the key to running it out of the shotgun. All of a sudden, you know, they're blitzing or flowing over there or they're over-pursuing on that tight end wing side. We're running the buck sweep, but all of a sudden our quarterback throws a little screen or a run pass, and then we hit a big play. So it keeps the defense honest.
Do you I believe that in order for your offense to go, those guys up front got to be your main guys. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but what do you do to develop your offensive line?
Well, I agree. The offensive line is the key. And we found out that, you know, with the wing tee, we can have the smaller, quicker, aggressive kids. Our school always seems to have the, you know, 6 foot, 185-pound, 200-pound linebacker types that love to hit. So those kids make great pulling guards. They might not necessarily make a good zone offense player where you have to double team and drive people back, but we can down block and we can pull and we can run. We have really good athletes at our offensive line position, so that's what we can, you know, with the wing tee, that kind of helps us out because we can put some athletes on the field rather than, you know, just big guys that can just move people. We'd love to have those, but we just can't get them all the time. So one year we won the state championship, we had a 165-pound tackle. So, and he was rip your heart out and eat it for lunch. He was a tough kid, but you know, he wasn't very big, but he sure could pull and block and down block, and he'll pop you in the mouth.
Well, you wish you had everybody who would eat your heart, eat the guy hot and everything.
I don't want to scare anybody over there on the East Coast, so.
No, I talk it all day. Take him out. Let's get mean over here, guys. I mean, you can shake the hands later on, but let's take them out right now.
There you go.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of team rules, do you? Because of
it's just basically don't do anything to embarrass the program. Don't do anything to embarrass your parents, and that's basically our rule. And, you know, as we get off the bus and we go eat after the game or something, I'm always preaching that. Don't do anything to embarrass the great tradition of Capital High School. Don't do anything that would embarrass your parents. And basically, we tell the kids, would this make your mom proud? If it does, if you answer no, then don't do it. So, you know, if you preach that, you're pretty much good to go, as long as the kids buy into that concept.
Mm-hmm. And according to you, your kids have bought. Well, you can't have the success you're having without kids buying into what you do, because you are very consistent in not only winning but getting good kids out of your school. What do you do to get your kids in colleges and everything? Because you know they always say wing people, you know, double wing, single wing people. You know, we're not doing all this other crazy stuff, so we can't get our kids in school. Do you find that to be true?
We don't have a problem with that at all. We have offensive linemen. We have running backs right now in the Division I that, you know, came from our offense that are now running the zone that are successful. I think a lot of the colleges kind of recruit size and speed. So, you know, we usually have some pretty good speed, and sometimes we have some size. So, but we don't seem to have that problem. Yeah, Montana's kind of unique. It has, I believe, 7 NAIA schools, which heavily recruit us. So we get a lot of kids going to the NAIA level. From there, we have FCS Division I. We'll get 2 or 3 kids in that level. Every once in a while, we'll go to the FBS. We'll get maybe 1 every 2 or 3 years go to the FBS. But, you know, we never seem to have a problem with that. We, you know, our kids can, as long as our kids have the size and they have the speed and they're aggressive and they like to hit, I think they're recruitable for us.
Do you ever have issues with parents who think that their kids should be playing? And, you know, why is my kid not playing? Why is he standing behind you? Do you ever have that issue?
All the time. I think every coach struggles with that. You know, our big answer is our weight room. We keep track of every time a kid lifts, and they get points for that, and they get a point for it. If they lift as a weightlifting class or they lift after school, they get 1 lifting point. If they lift at 6 a.m., they get a little bit more. It's like a 1.25 points, so they get a little bit more because it's a little bit tougher. It's more up-tempo, and it's a little more intense lifting. We also give kids points for doing other sports. So every sport they do, they get 25 lifting points. So we kind of tally that up at the end, and if a parent complains, and why isn't my kid playing, and he doesn't have the lifting points, I just say, hey, he doesn't have the points. You know, he's not going to play. And kids kind of know that. Yeah, they better get their weightlifting points. We tie that into getting their equipment. We just passed out some equipment the last couple of weeks for our summer camps, and we've had freshmen get their equipment over seniors because they have more weightlifting points. So we do everything on weightlifting points, and you know, parents kind of realize that. The kids realize that, so they know that they want the best equipment. They want some playing time. You know, you need to get your butt in the weight room. Now, also, you get double-edged sword. There's some kids that just work their butts off that just aren't very good. We will play them. We will sneak them in. They might not start. starting doesn't determine weight training or weightlifting points, but ability does. But you know, if it comes down to two kids and they're close, we're gonna start the kid that has the most weightlifting points. But we're a smaller school, so we like to rotate a lot of kids in. We're fortunate enough to have we two platoon. We have 11 starters on offense, 11 on defense, and so that gets us a little bit more. And we really stress special teams. So special teams for us is really big. So in order for a kid to get on the special teams, we stress only our studs are on special teams. So we can there's certain special teams we can work some of those kids in, get them playing time. And then one last thing is we're one of the top programs, so we get up on some teams pretty good, and you know we can get a lot of kids playing time from there. And you know we have four levels of football as well, so we. You know, kids can play at the freshman level, sophomore, JV, and varsity, so that kind of helps us.
What's your bread and butter play?
Buck sweep. We love the buck sweep. I love the. I don't know if everybody else loves the buck sweep, but I love the buck sweep. I'd call it every play if I. That's what's nice about the shotgun. Shotgun, you know, you can read. We're reading the backside with our quarterback. We can also tag it so we're, you know, throwing a bubble screen or a little. We call it a force screen. We can also tag it to throw a run pass on the backside. So with our buck sweep, it really has up to 10 little components off it that we can, you know, a pass or a read by our quarterback. So I don't even know how it's going to look when it's being run. So I know we're pulling both guards to the tight end and wing, and we might hand off to the halfback, but that's not the way it might turn out. So that's what I kind of like about the shotgun. You never know what it's going to turn out, and the kids got a say in how it's going to look.
Mm-hmm. And your kids love it, I assume.
Well, they've bought into that's our play, and when we call that, you know, it's third and goal on the 5-yard line, and in the state championship game, we call the buck sweep. The kids got a big smile on their face, and they're nodding. They're saying, "Oh yeah, here it comes." So you know, they bought in that it's our play and it's our bread and butter, and they know it like the back of their hand. So.
And the buck sweep at the varsity level is the buck sweep down at the ninth grade level. I'm going to assume.
Correct.
And the middle school. So you have one system, and you have one system coming all the way up. So you don't reteach.
Not really. Our middle school system is it's kind of a club sport where we don't have one middle school. It breaks off into a bunch of teams, but most of those teams are running some form of our offense, at least the terminology. So when they get to their freshman level, they have the same terminology. So, but we don't push those coaches to run exactly our offenses. Most of them seek out us and try to incorporate some of that stuff. So, but yeah, by the time we get them, you know, the same trigger terms that we're using as far as down blocks and pulls and all that stuff, the kids know all the buzzwords. And they know exactly what we mean when we say some of those.
Now, how many high schools are in your area?
Oh, in our conference, our league is 14. We have two high schools in our town.
Okay. And that's, I assume, that's your arch rival.
Oh, yeah. Good battles. We get 8,000 to 9,000 people at our games. You know, back east, you get 20,000 or something. But for us, when we get 8,000, we play at a local college. Carroll College is one of the top NAIA schools. We play in their stadium, and, you know, we get it just packed. And it's a cool atmosphere for our kids because it's like a little college game. You know, you get 8,000 to 9,000 people there and rocking the stadium.
And I assume you haven't lost too many of those battles.
No, not too many. We have a pretty good record against them.
You're so modest.
I don't want to say anything. There might be some Helena people listening, and they're going to use that as their pregame speech, and we're in trouble.
Oh, God. When you first started doing this offense, what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome? And I'm talking about the shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Basically, the shotgun snap itself, when you go from under center to shotgun offense, it's a little bit different. You have to train your centers, and so it's – if you want to just switch over from an under center to a shotgun, that's going to be a problem. The other thing is the reads. The quarterback has to, you know, he now has a read. He just can't hand off. So you got to train the quarterback to read his key, and you got to execute that. The biggest mistake sometimes we make is the quarterback doesn't read properly. So he's handing the ball off, and they're slanting towards our tight end wing, and, you know, we get stuffed, whereas he pulls the ball, you know, we get a big gain because the defense is cheating. So getting the quarterback to buy into that and throwing the bubble screens, it's not a tough throw, but it's kind of a pressure throw. It's like, it's just right there. You're going to flick the ball out there, but, you know, there's a lot, you know, don't think about it too much. It's like a free throw, so you don't think about it too much. So but by getting him to throw that bubble screen, it kind of widens the field. We want to try to stretch the field horizontally, and bubble screens and all that stuff will do it. But getting him to throw that sometimes can be a challenge.
Now, is your quarterback the prototype quarterback, or do you have an athlete at that position? What's that like?
We get a variety. You know, in high school we can't recruit our kids, so sometimes we get the thrower runner. When we get the thrower runner quarterback, it's lights out. We're going to be pretty good offensively. But sometimes we just get a thrower pocket type guy that can't run that well. So, you know, we adapt a little bit towards his talent. Maybe we throw the ball downfield a little bit. We won a state championship with a 6'5 kid that just could not run at all. So I think you got to adapt towards your quarterback. But we get all sorts of them. We get running backs. Sometimes 2 years ago we were down. We played three quarterbacks. We got our top two get hurt, and we were down to more of a running type quarterback. And we were able to be successful with him just because of our offense. If we were a passing team, we would probably wouldn't do too well. So that's another advantage of the wing tee.
And you don't use let me ask it like this: do you ever go under the center?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. We're probably about, well, not quite a bit. We're about 30% maybe these days under center. We still like to run our jet sweep under center. It's a little bit quicker. We also like to run our rocket toss under center. So there's some series that we still like to run under center. You run under center against a blitz team. You have a fullback in there and a halfback, and you can use your fullback to kind of block backside. You can't read that guy anymore, so your fullback will block backside. So we still use quite a bit of it. We don't pass a lot of it out of our under center, but it's still a big part of our offense.
You know, is this something you work on daily in practice, or you just how does your practice go? Let me ask that question like that.
We'll have like a pre-period where we're our centers and quarterbacks meet, and that's when we kind of work a little bit of our mesh. Pre-practice, it's kind of more of like a three-quarter walkthrough type stuff. We're kind of working on mesh with the running backs and all that. You know, then we do the basic stretch as a team. Then we break off into individual periods where the centers or the O-line meet with the O-line and basically get into a group situation after that where we kind of either group up with the wide receivers, quarterbacks. Sometimes it's quarterbacks, running backs. Sometimes it's running backs, line, depending on the day. Then we usually get into a team period where we're kind of scouting the other team, where we're running their defenses and their blitzes. One of the things we've done, we call this a co-op period on offense, is we line up the offense, and we'll go on air or against the scout team, and we try to run some of our base plays as fast as we can. And we'll run that once a week, and we're always preaching to the kids, faster, faster, faster. I think you get a lot of those teams that'll, you know, they're good running the plays three-quarter speed, but when you're facing a team that has a very fast defense, you got to be running full speed and executing full speed. So we're trying to stress that. we have special teams period. One of the best things we did was during our special teams period, the quarterbacks and the wide receivers kind of stand around. They don't usually play a lot of special teams, so that's when we work on some of our screen games. So it allows us to kind of work on two things at the same time and kind of save some time during the practice period. So they'll work on the screens while our special teams are working. But a lot of the things we do is situations. We've gone to a lot of situations, third and five. I think if you're a running team, you got to be good at third and four, five, and six. That's what we seem to be in a lot of. If you're a passing team, you got to be good at third and 10. If you're not good at third and 10, you're not going to be very successful. So we do a lot of situations with third and 3, 4, 5, and or 4, 5, 6, and third and 10s.
When you do your no huddle, are you looking to snap the ball quickly, or do you have do you have different stages of the no huddle, like a lot of people do?
Yeah, we have different stages. One of them is we'll try to get the ball snapped within 4 seconds of the referee blowing the whistle. In general, we'll kind of want to line up. We use the card system, kind of similar to what Oregon does. So we'll hold up a card, and the whole team looks, and then they get set, and then they run it. And so sometimes we have to sit and wait for the refs. Sometimes they've already blown the whistle. It just depends on the situation. There's another tempo package we use where we just yell out a code word, and they hear it, and they get up to the line, and they run it as quick as they can. So we'll have about 10 of those plays, 10 code words, where we can just go super tempo. But our usual tempo we like to run is just – look to the sidelines, get the play, run it as quick as you can. We try to get it 4 seconds or less when the refs blow their whistle. The last tempo we have is we go under center, or we go with a huddle, but we try to break the snap and sprint to the line of scrimmage and snap the ball or put somebody in motion within 4 seconds. So that puts stress on the defense because defenses have to align to our tight end and wing. If they don't, we're off and running on our buck sweep. So they know that. And so it's kind of hard for defenses sometimes to align that way. Sometimes we'll put the wing on the quick side and they misalign. Sometimes we'll shift the tight end and the wing and see what they do. So all that type of tempo kind of puts a little bit of stress, and it causes their defense to prepare a little bit extra for us during the week.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody ever caught up with you as far as what you're doing?
Oh, sure. But you could tell they've practiced all week on it, which is, you know, great because they've wasted time, practicing just for our tempo, and they haven't been able to pack other stuff in, so maybe blitzes mm-hmm. or something. But you can see we'll get teams that kind of line up in a line, and they're just hunched and ready, and as soon as they see our tight end wing, they just break on over there. Some teams will line up, strong side, quick side. That's how their defense is structured. Other teams will just go right and left. And those teams have a little bit more success. However, those teams have to – that strong side end, sometimes he has to get a down block. Sometimes he's going to get a base block. He can't – they can't really specialize to what we're going to do as far as strong side and quick side. So, it's a trade-off on some defenses.
Now, I don't know if it's you or someone, but I think it's you. You set your strength into the boundary?
We do that a lot because we'll get a lot of teams that like to run. We get a lot of fire zone blitz, just like slants, and we get it to the strong to the wide side of the field most of the time. Most of our defenses we face try to protect the wide side of the field because we're a sweep team. But we'll put our tight end wing to the boundary quite a bit. So we'll put our tight end wing to the boundary, but we have our two twins receivers to the wide side of the field. That puts a lot of stress on those type of teams that like to position their defense to the wide side of the field, because now we have a very strong run game to the boundary, and we have a pretty strong passing game. You know, counting the halfback, you have three receivers out there to the wide side. So, you know, it's tough for some defenses, I think. Where are you going to put the strong safety? Are you going to put him on the two-receiver side, or are you going to put him on the tight end wing to stop the run? So that's one of the things we look for when we're kind of scouting defenses.
So you, in basic, you have the best of both worlds.
Well, by using tight end wing, we think we do. But in the going to the shotgun, you can put wide receivers out. And, you know, we go to ghost sets as well, where you have the tight end wing to the boundary, and then you can get rid of a halfback and split him out. Now you have three receivers to one side.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's best of both worlds. You have three receivers to the wide side of the field. You have a tight end wing, very strong running game to the other side. If you have a running quarterback that can throw, it's a pretty good package right there.
That's more than pretty good. That's deadly.
Well, we like to think so, but
what do you, as a over the years, you have? I assume you've gotten better and better and better over the years. You learn a lot over the years. What do you say to young coaches who? What advice would you give a young coach who's just coming up? And what would be the best thing you can tell a young coach?
Just learn from as many different people as you can, and that kind of develops your philosophy. You know, we're still learning. We visited a couple of colleges this year. We went to Oregon and visited with them. So we're constantly learning, trying to pick up on new techniques. We still have our base plays, you know, so find that base bread and butter play that you want to go with and stick with it and kind of build from there. I see a lot of young coaches come in and usually they go quick as they want to try to, you know, do the offense of the week. You know, they see something on TV and they want to try to run that. It doesn't usually work that way. It's the technique involved. It's the footwork and all that stuff that makes the play go. That's kind of the secret sauce. So, you know, I would just tell them, you know, to find that base play, get great at it, find something to get great at, whether it's a pass play or a run play or whatever. It doesn't matter what the play is. You've got coaches all over the nation. They're winning with the wing tee. They're winning with the double wing. They're winning with option, veer, whatever. So, you know, find that thing you're good at and you believe in and stick with it.
Okay. We have someone who wants to ask you a question, of course. Let me see if I can get him online, okay?
Sounds good.
Hello?
Yeah, are you with me?
Yeah, I got you. Who am I speaking with?
This is Coach Sklar at Wild Lake High School in Columbia, Maryland.
Okay, how you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great. I noticed you're wearing a double wing T-shirt on your photo, which just takes
me
back. We ran a double wing for a while and won a state championship with it in 2010.
Yeah, I remember. I tried to call you one day to congratulate you.
I think we've talked.
Yes, sir.
Quick question for Coach Murphy. We've got all three of his DVDs, and we're talking about converting over. What supplemental plays besides the buck sweep and the belly blast does he run?
We still run the jet sweep. Jet sweep is good out of the gun.
Under center.
Under center, it's great under center. It's good from the gun. We've moved to more of a West Virginia type thing where we're pitching it forward. It's really
okay.
A pass. That's to pad our pass stats a little bit because the rumor is, you know, I never make it to school on time because I never pass on the highway.
I hear you.
We're in the games.
We won a state championship and threw the ball three times. So.
Yeah, there you go. Still works.
And the only one that was completed was thrown by the halfback.
Good for him.
The other question is with the wing tee. Of course, we get the Delaware wing tee out here on the East Coast.
Yep.
The game is on the East Coast is built more around the fullback and the buck trap. Now, do you have something similar other than your quarterback read that hits up inside?
Yeah, we have a lot of teams call it the dart play where we pull the tackle. So, and we climb and we kick out the Mike linebacker. So we kind of moved more to that because we get a lot of teams squeezing down. We run the trap under center, and we're really good at it. So we get our three technique just slanting down all the time. When they see that, we get a lot of teams that are spilling. So it's easier for us now is to block out on the three technique, and then we start climbing to that Mike linebacker. And it puts a lot of stress on the offense or the defense because it kind of starts off looking like a buck sweep, might be a sweep, and then the halfback kind of plants his foot and just knifes it up right at that play side A gap, and we kick out at the Mike linebacker. That was probably our best play this year because our halfback really liked running that play.
He's got to turn up hard and sharp. It's the old tackle trap from the belly series then.
Yeah, exactly. It's T-counter or whatever you call it, except instead of trapping the three technique, we're going to climb a little bit and trap the Mike linebacker. But what we usually get in our league is we get so much blitz and so much slanting. We get that Mike linebacker just filling hard, and we actually end up most of the time trapping him out, and we get a nice little seam right in there. And you can tag that play. We'll take our wing and put him in motion and run a speed option off it on the quick side. We also have a bubble screen off that. So it's really a quadruple option. You got the handoff to the halfback. The quarterback can read the quick side end. He can also pitch it on the speed option with the fullback. He can also pre-snap with the bubble screen. So you get four options off that.
Okay.
Quadruple option.
Do you give the quarterback the freedom to make this choice on his own, or is a lot of this predetermined?
The bubble screens are his choice. It's a leverage thing. We kind of teach him a few guidelines, but our basic rule, if we have a really good wide receiver out there we want to get the ball to, is if that kid can beat the flat defender one-on-one with a little throw, if you can make the throw, can he beat him, then we'll throw it. So we might change that if we don't have a stud out there, if our quarterback is not as great throwing the bubble screen, but that's his key. The other key is, you know, we're reading the five technique, but that can change. Sometimes we read the three technique. We game plan it week to week.
Now, I ran the Veer back in the 70s, so I've been doing this for a while. We had trouble when we were teaching the Veer, teaching the read on the inside and the outside Veer from week to week, whether we were reading a 5-tech or a 7-tech. When you guys are reading your buck sweep keep play, do you have to switch back and forth between reading the 3? I know you have your steel block where you're blocking the 5-tech. Do you have trouble with the quarterback making that read?
We rep it so much. The hardest read is that 3-technique, though, when he reads that, because the 3-technique can do so many different things. He can get upfield. He can slant with the pulling guard. So it gets a little tough, but you have to rep it and rep it. So usually we don't have a problem reading the 5-technique backside. It's a little bit problem sometimes when we're reading the 3-technique. But there's other stuff you can do with that 3-technique as well. So, and, you know, we have other options to go if we see a lot of the 3-techniques. Usually if we have a 3-technique, our buck sweep has pretty good angles on that play side, so teams don't run that a lot. So if their whole game plan is to try to, you know, chase it down with the backside 3-technique, you know, we're going to have some options for that.
Okay, final question for you. We see a lot of the 3-3 stack in Air League. And in your video, or in your DVD, I saw that you had it drawn up so that your wing is blocking down and you're kicking out the outside linebacker, dog, whatever you want to call him.
Correct.
We usually see this guy come up on the line of scrimmage and play us as a hard defensive end. So my thought is you have to be able to do it both ways. You either have to be able to down block on that end or you have to be able to kick that end. Do you have the ability to make that call?
Oh, yeah. We don't see too much of the 3-3 stack up here, but we have seen it in the past. But you got to figure if, you know, that dog linebacker, that outside linebacker, he's more of a speed guy for us. We usually see him as a kind of a rover. So all of a sudden, you're weak, you have a tight end wing, he's going to go play a 9-technique. That's different from him. That should give you a slight advantage if everything's even. So, you know, we've been working all week, you know, all year. For the last 8 years, these kids have been down blocking those wings. So they should be able to down block on a little skinny kid, you know, facing a – normally we're facing a 6'5", you know, 220 kid. So
yeah, well, you put your fullback kid at wing too, yeah.
And we put our big guy – and we could put tight ends at wing. We put kids that like to hit that are pretty big. So we figure that's kind of our advantage. But with the 3-3 stack, what we would do is we'd run some of our double wing. They got you outnumbered on the quick side. So, you know, fine. We're going to run strong side, which we like to do. That's why we don't see a lot of the 3-3 stack. So we would probably go with another wing over there. We'd put two wings over there, and I want to see what they're going to do with that. Are they going to shift over? They should. They better. Otherwise, you got a big advantage because, you know, they're already out. You already have a advantage with the tight end wing on the 3-3 stack, but you throw another
right,
wing
now,
punch next to it.
In your DVD, I've seen where you run that double wing. Do you actually go end over and unbalanced occasionally?
Yes, we'll run all that, and we'll flop, and yep.
Okay,
put a couple
of tight
ends,
answered all my questions, and I really appreciate your time. We're making the transition. We were a double wing team for a while. We tried the spread last year and just weren't very good at it. We want to get back to power running the ball.
Well, this is the best of both worlds. So if you got any questions, shoot me an email or give me a call.
Thanks a whole lot, Coach.
You bet, Coach. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. I love it when they call in.
You betcha.
Yeah, to get all these good questions and everything. A couple more questions, Coach, and we're going to let you go. How do you game plan? And how do you call plays, you know, what's your philosophy behind that?
Well, we've kind of changed in the last few years with some of the tempo stuff. We want to try to go as fast as we can. I've gone full circle. So, I mean, I don't think there's there's not a perfect way of doing it. I've gone from, you know, scouting them and doing tendencies to finding what they run on third and five and whatever, and then trying to find the best play for that to now what we kind of do in our tempo package is to package them in groups of four plays. So we want to try to run four plays as quick as we can, and then we'll go to another group of four plays. And it's kind of freaked me out because I'm an old-time, you know, scout. I'm a math guy, so I want to find the tendencies. But, you know, this is what some of those tempo teams are doing, or they're just running the play. And it's if you're coaching them up in the week and they're executing, you should have an advantage because they're going to be slightly misaligned and confused and they can't key on their tendencies. So, you know, we're doing, I guess to answer your question, I'm not going to answer it very well, but we're grouping up the plays into groups of four and trying to running them as fast as we can. Otherwise, what we'll do is we do try to get a tendency list on our third downs. We can't get a good tendency on every down, so third and four, five, and six is our key down. We're in that most of the time because we're a run team. So we try to figure out what they're going to do blitz-wise and front-wise and then try to get into the best situation for those. So we might go off our scripts and run some of our third and four, five, six plays.
Okay. All right. One last question. Why you keep doing this? Why are you in this business? You've accomplished a lot. I mean, you know, you put in 30 some years. Why?
Well, that's a good question. You know, sometimes you have those bad days. Every coach goes through. Still with you?
Yeah, I'm here. Uh-huh.
I had some weird beeping. So sometimes you get those bad days where you get the, you know, angry parent or whatever, the disgruntled kid. Everybody has that. So, you know, we do it for the kids. You know, we just love those kids and to improve football. You know, we want to build those relationships with the kids. And once you do that, it's more of a not a game. It's more of you know, kind of a family type thing. Eddie Robinson probably said it the best, great Grambling coach, and he said, you know, I don't coach. You know, for football's sakes, I coach for those kids that love football. You know, I want to be around those kids that like football, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. I just I like being around people who like football, not necessarily the game, but the people that love football. Tip with those kids and seeing them go on to college and be successful, being successful parents and husbands. That's what I'm kind of into right now.
Okay, well, Coach, I appreciate your time. I tell you what, I had a blast tonight.
Oh, I did too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and listen, you have a good summer, and maybe I'm gonna take you up on that invite to come out there.
Hey, sounds good. We'll get you some big trout.
Okay, well, we'll see if we can do that. You have a good night, Coach.
Take care, Coach.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night. Okay, guys, that concludes our show for tonight. Next week, for all you youth coaches, we have the great Dave Caesar on, and he's going to be talking about the youth, his youth program, and about the single wing offense. So I hope you tune in. And again, I want to thank you for all you guys who listened, you call and ask questions, and for all you guys with the nice emails to me and everything, you know, to encourage me to keep going. And you know, I'm just having a blast, tell you the truth. I'm having more fun than you can realize, and trying to get ready for this coming season. And I'm learning a lot sitting in this seat right here. Gosh, you don't know, I'm taking notes left and right. Again, don't forget about the symposium this summer, the Single Wing Symposium this summer in Virginia. Let's start getting planned to go there. And any questions you have, you know, just shoot me an email. And like the other coach called from Maryland, you can get Coach Murphy stuff. Just Google him, and if you're interested in doing something like this, you know, you can get his DVD set, and they are very good. You know, that's it would be a great investment for you. So, guys, until next week, and where we'll have Dave Caesar on. I want each one of you to have a great week, and those of you who will be going during the summer on vacations, be careful. And for those of you who will be starting this summer conditioning program like we are, just have fun, man. That's what it's all about. And y'all have a good night. Tell someone you love them. And give them a good hug. Good night.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking. What a wonderful world. Yes, I think.